Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and it's time for a podcast. I recently traveled to Brazil, and I met one of the most amazing and creative aesthetic physicians over there, Dr. Fabio Saito. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Dr. K. It's a great pleasure to be here and talk a little bit about what we have been doing here in Brazil. And it was a very pleasure visit that you did here in Brazil. So thank you for the invitation, and it will be a pleasure to talk a little bit more with you guys.
Oh my goodness, the pleasure is mine. I was so fortunate to be invited to participate with Galderma and the MAP meeting in Brazil. It really opened my eyes. For those of you who don't know, this meeting is amazing. We had it in a football soccer stadium, 1,000 live attendees and almost 9,000 virtual attendees. And I was shocked and amazed by the frontiers that Brazil is pushing in aesthetics and how many providers there are and how popular aesthetics is. So what is going on in Brazil? Tell me about what are the biggest trends that you see happening right now.
Yeah, actually, I think that the aesthetic medicine is trending everywhere. And in Brazil, we have a huge acceptance of that, more normalized events, more normalized interventions, the aesthetic interventions. So the public is eager for that, and the medical doctors is really into it also. Here in Brazil, I think that Galderma is the MAP event was the sixth edition, and Galderma is really leading these operations in medical field. I think that we have a different aspect in Brazil that we have in USA. The on-label indications for the injectables, toxin and fillers, are more broad. So in this way, Brazil can talk more openly with the doctors, and it helps a lot. I think that Brazil keeps pushing the boundaries for the medical indication in the world. So I think we are fortunate for that.
Very true. You guys have no boundaries in Brazil. We are so limited by what the FDA approves and allows in the US. So I think you guys are really spearheading significant change. I am a big fan of biostimulators like PLLA or Sculptra. What are the new things that people are doing with these collagen biostimulators in Brazil that probably the rest of the world isn't as advanced in?
I think that one major difference as we are advancing with the use of Sculptra here in Brazil is that we can really adapt the way that we inject for the needs of the patients. It's not like a morph injection and just spreading the PLLA over one restricted area, but understanding how it will evolve during the years and how it will evolve in different areas. So one of the aspects that we spoke in the event is how we can adapt the indications and adapt the injection for each of our patients. So this is very interesting because in Brazil, we have a very mixed ethnic population with different aspects like Asian, Caucasian, Afro descendants, and Latins. So very different faces. And we can adapt the use of Sculptra or PLLA for each one of those patients. And I think that now we understand that clearly. And this is one of the things that are trending now, the use of Sculptra in different ways of the face.
The face and the body. I was so interested to learn more about the use of Sculptra for creping, treating skin of the abdomen, the upper arms, the thighs, even like the vulvar and genital area. So to me, this is going to be fascinating because definitely we all notice that as we age, you hit a certain point where the skin changes, even on the extremities, on other areas besides the face. So do you think people are going to invest energy and money into keeping the body as beautiful as the face?
Yeah, I think that in Brazil we have a huge appeal on that because of the beaches and the body is very important for the Brazilian women and men. So sculpture is helping a lot. I think that the technologies that we have for body indications evolved a lot for the past few years, but it's not as effective as a surgery or effective as we have fillers for the face. And now we have this tool, the biostimulators for the body, that helps a lot. And I think that with more defined protocols for butts, for abdomens, for thighs, I think that it helps a lot for the objective that we want to deliver for the patients.
True. I hope that they'll come out with bigger vials of Sculptra, because it's quite difficult to treat large body size area with size vials. So do you anticipate hopefully that might be coming for us?
Maybe. Yeah, this is something that we've been talking internally. And this is one of the requests of the doctors for doctors that use Sculptra a lot with like body indications, that it's interesting to have a bigger vial. I completely agree with you.
Definitely. Now, sometimes we hear controversy that in the U.S., for example, some facial plastic surgeons have said if you use Sculptra in your face, that it's going to make having a facelift surgery very difficult, that it creates this sort of fibrosis that's hard to dissect facial planes. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that for every tissue that you have manipulated, you bring some scar tissue. But the main point, and we learned that in the scar process, you have a reaccommodation of the collagen fibers. So probably if you do the lift, the facial lift, after a certain time, after a period of time where those collagens are set to reorganize, it will not be that difficult. It's like doing a second facelift. If you have time for the fibers to organize themselves, it will be easier to dissect, and it will be not contraindicated to do the operation. But I think that the benefits that you gain doing biostimulation to make the skin thicker and with more adherence is better for the patient. What I see here in Brazil is that the facial lifts is being postponed or having less indications as long as we have been treating the patients with fillers, biostimulators, and technologies. I don't know, how do you feel? Because U.S. Has a school of facelift that is more advanced than Brazil, I think. If Brazil has a huge impact in body indications, body plastic surgeons, I think that U.S. leads the facial plastic surgeries.
I would agree with you. I do think that when you start Sculptra or biostimulators at a younger age, really the scaffolding and lift and tightness of the skin is superior to normal aging skin. So you are going to delay or even offset and prevent the need for a facelift. Really, we're only going to do facelift surgery when you have more than a centimeter of excess skin, which is not feasible to fully, add fillers and volume to the face, or it's not attractive to do that. But for the average person who's kept up with skin laxity changes by doing biostimulators, you just maybe will not need them for an extra 10 years. But I agree with you. I think the people who say like, oh no, it's going to create all this fibrosis and you can't have a facelift, that's not right. I mean, we definitely do revision surgeries on noses, on faces, and after the initial inflammatory irritative stage, things settle down, but we usually make people wait 6 to 12 months to operate or touch that area again. So I think you can do Sculptra. You can just give healing time and a time for collagen fibers to settle down, and do that a year out would be perfect, actually. But the skin changes are quite dramatic. When you're doing Sculptra, you go from older, crepier, lax skin that loses elasticity to the renewed, fresh and bouncy skin. It's really kind of amazing.
Yeah, and I think that the importance here is to plan with the patients, to the patient, what we're going to do. So we have to do a long-term treatment plan. We're going to do Sculptra this year, maybe toxin twice a year, and maybe surgery in 4 or 5 years from now. And then you can establish when you're going to stop the biostimulators, wait for the skin, the tissue to heal, and then proceed to the surgery. We're not going to do Sculptra now and plan a surgery in 6 months.
Exactly. I think that idea of giving a long-term 10-year beauty plan is pretty important. I'm doing that with my patients also. And it may not be that you're having the discussion for surgery, that you need surgery right now, but you're planting the seed in the back of their head so that there is at some level acceptance that the process of Botox and fillers only goes so far, and then we will evolve to a little more aggressive and more in-depth things. So I think that talking that through really helps the patient understand that this is not a one and done, because some people just want to believe that the filler and the Botox are going to fix everything, and that's certainly not the case. I think Brazilian women and men age very conservatively and beautifully and naturally. Why do you think that's so different from what we see in the American images of, you know, botched looking celebrities and people doing too much?
I think that we have this population here in Brazil as well. I think that now it's very hard to say what is natural or what is beauty. In my office, I speak a lot with the patients. I talk a lot with the patients because this is what I understand as beauty, to age naturally and keep getting better as we can, and not a pursuit of youthness in all cases, in at every cost. I think that we need to understand that we are growing older, and we can grow old and be the best versions of ourselves. I think this is like a cliche, but I think this is true. We cannot grow old at any cost, pursuing the beauty or the youthness. So I think these conversations that we have with the patients creates a relationship of trust, and it helps a lot in the discussion of the patients. I don't know if I made myself clear, but I think that this is very important.
I agree. I think we have to teach our patients a little acceptance of aging. Because if they are going to be chronically unhappy with every line and every wrinkle and every sign of aging, like, we can't help them because it's going to happen. And we need a little acceptance of that. One of the biggest headlines over the past few weeks was Madonna's appearance at the Grammys. What are your thoughts on the criticisms and how she looked?
Yeah, I saw people that were criticizing them, criticizing her a lot, and other people that were criticizing those critics. And yesterday she posted a photo telling that the swelling of the surgery was gone and that she was beautiful. And really, I don't think that to take a person and not knowing her age is beautiful.
64, but you know.
Yeah, but we don't know if she's 64 with appearance of 50 or a 50 that was overdone and looked like a 64 that was treated. So I think that for me, it's too much. I don't think that she looks good. But this is something that we have discussed in MAP, especially when we speak to the younger generations, that they have a different view of what is beauty. The Gen Z, for example, what is a masculine face or more feminine face? And sometimes they want to be more androgynous, women that look more masculine, face features, and a a man that look more feminine lips, and are they wrong? How can we analyze that? I think that it's very, very hard to talk about that. And what I see, okay, is that as we grow old in the office, the patients that look for doctors that think like them, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's space for everybody. I think that there are doctors that are going to do Madonna's faces, and there are doctors that are going to do something that is exaggerated, as we see. But I think that there is space for everybody. As educators, as speakers, as professors, I think that we need to translate what we think that is correct for us. I try not to judge, but I try to educate as I see, as what is beautiful and what is natural and what is a good treatment, a good static treatment. I don't know, how do you deal with that, with those patients that ask for too much, that asks for big transformations and have a different view what beautiful is?
I think it's also, I also agree with you. I sometimes wonder if society is just morphing through this phase right now of amplified lips and amplified features and, like, you know, Barbie doll accentuated beauty. But looking back in history, like, humans have always done things with body image and, you know, taking out a rib or shrinking their feet to really tiny, or wearing super tight corsets. Yeah. Or the African cultures enlarging. Yes. Necks, elongating their lobes. Like, who's to say that it's wrong or weird or different just because it's an evolution of, you know, cultural expression, and everyone is entitled to that. So I am like with you. I have my limits. When I see lips that I think are too big and I don't feel comfortable, then I will say no, because that's not my artistic style. And I think everyone who's entering into aesthetics needs to be much more careful to choose their architect of their face. Like, who is going to be your facial artist and who's responsible for your look and your image for the next 10 years? And do you agree with their aesthetic? Like, who is their ideal beauty muse? And do you want that projection on your face? Because I don't think people think enough about that. They think about the price, they think about, you know, value mm-hmm. concepts, but they're not thinking about artistry. Like, does this person have a beautiful aesthetic eye? Are they going to craft something that's more, brings out my best features? So we have to teach our patients that, because honestly, they think a syringe is a syringe is a syringe and I can get it anywhere and it's all going to look good. That's absolutely not the case, right?
Exactly. I think that one of the good points that we are growing more experts or more experienced doctors is that the patients that look for us understand that, understand the way you treat patients, understand what you are offering for the patients. So I think that this helps a lot with the conversation with them, that they think more like you and they understand what you can offer. And I put my personal limits of what I can deliver and what I'm not going to do. Those very exaggerated lips and very exaggerated facial filler patients. Those are my boundaries. Those are my limits. And I try to explain that for the patients.
It's difficult because you want to market and brand yourself, and put out your imagery of what you want to do, but it's hard to show subtlety and finesse on something like Instagram or TikTok, right? Like, you almost have to show exaggeration, a little over the top, or something like, we call it a thumb stopper, like what's going to stop the scrolling of your thumb. So for people who want to show artistry, it's very challenging because sometimes what looks very refined and delicate and pretty in person translates to, oh, I don't see a big difference on a before and after.
Here in Brazil we have a more difficult cases with social media because we cannot show before and after photos. So if you see the Instagram of Brazilian doctors, usually we are not showing cases, we are not showing before and afters. So it's struggling to think what we are going to show for patients to do a thumb stop. So it's very hard for Brazilian doctors.
It is super hard. I think if I was a Brazilian physician, I'd just showcase like who I am, like my aesthetic, what I think is beautiful, how I talk to people, and, you know, teaching concepts. But that's not necessarily sexy. That may not sell.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a vision for the person, and how are they elegant? Are they over the top? Are they, like, you know, every person will find their tribe of supporters if they project the image that they want out there.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. So having a strong persona and having a brand identity that correlates with your work at the office, it's very important. So I think that what you have done with social media and how you make your presence so clear for the audience, it's perfect. So it resonates with the audience, and I think that this is something that for young doctors, they should pursue as well.
Yeah, I think it's very important too, because you can have the most wonderful, beautiful work, but if no one knows about it, then how will you get your word out there? How will you fill your chair in the office? So if you were to give one piece of advice to someone who's thinking about beginning their journey as an injector, what would that be? Like, if you could do something different 10 years ago, what would you tell yourself now?
10 years ago, I think that if I could try to invest more in my personal branding and doing the social media more focus on the kind of patients that I want in my office today, it would be very, very different. I think that knowing what kind of patients that you want to address, what kind of patients that you want to treat in your office, helps a lot to give directions in what to do in your office. So
yeah,
having a clear target, right? Having a clear target of what you want to achieve, it's huge.
How about on a personal level? Like 10 years back, any advice to yourself as a, you know, person, as a person?
This might sound a little bit, how can I say, lack of humility, but I think that I've been doing a good job from 10 years from now. I think that I've been true in what I believe, in how I treat patients, how I treat my patients. And I think this is very important, to be true to your values and to be true to what you really believe. I think this is one major advice. The success in your clinic, it will come if you do that sincerely, and if you do that with passion and with respect to the patients. I think that this is very, very important. And I think that I've been doing this through my career.
I think that's so important, because so often people that are new to the industry want to dive in and get busy fast, and they cut corners and quality. And I often feel like it's treated like a spa industry, and it bothers me a lot. I want us to be physicians and providers first, where we worry about the medicine. Like, this is medicine, aesthetic medicine. We need to have sterility. We need to follow concepts of, like, you know, following these concepts that make us real physicians instead of cutting corners just for fast money. So I think you're absolutely right. If you start slowly and you invest in those foundations, your practice is going to grow no matter what. I also think, like, you recently had a colleague, Dr. Rodrigo Ferraz, who passed away so suddenly as a young person. Not even, was he 40 even? But he, you know,
was 46. Found,
just was working out at the gym and was found dead in his house the next day. And then these kind of things just give you pause. I got to meet him at the Brazil meeting, and I was shocked to hear he passed away, and God bless him. But it makes you stop and think too, like, when we're running around like chicken with our head cut off, running from here to there and doing so many different activities? Are we taking time to relish the beauty around us, the people around us, to develop some outside interests? So I'd also would so recommend that people in our industry build time into the schedule to get to be a full person, to take care of family and, you know, have some hobbies outside of work, so that someday when you're older and you retire, you don't want to have nothing outside of work. But sometimes people do that. They have nothing outside their work. Yeah, I know you have a lot of hobbies.
I think that Rodrigo was an inspiration in every aspect, not only as injector, as a professor, but he was a very, very good person and was loved by so many people and so many aspects of his life. And I think that he was really an inspiration on how to conciliate every aspect that you were saying, Dr. K. So I think it's important for us to understand that we have different aspects and we have to chase happiness and success in the job, but also conciliate that with family and everyone that is around us.
Yes, don't lose sight of your own values and goals. Yeah. And personal things like your hobbies. I was so impressed to hear that you love sculpting and art. Tell me about your hobbies that probably have made you more artistic, injector and surgeon.
Yes, actually, before medicine, I was graduated in artistry, I don't know, it's plastic artists, sculpting and painting. Mm. And I love to do that during med school. I use it to do anatomic drawings for publications. And
nice.
Yeah, and more recently, I started to blow glass.
Wow.
So it's very, very nice to have some hobbies that you can change a little bit your focus, and doing the glass blowing is so, it needs so much attention, 100% focus in what you are doing in that moment. It's very good to clear your mind and give the troubles away. I think that we need to see artistry and to see beauty in every aspect of our life. So it's been very interesting to try these new hobbies, new things that we have been doing.
Yeah, it pushes your boundaries. It gives you more digital hand skills. And I totally agree. It's one of those things that you have to have 100% focus, just like when we're in the operating room. One of the things I love about the operating room is your brain turns off all the noise and you're just mind melded with what the work you're doing. And that's to me the best part of being in surgery, is just have that clarity where you're instantly like 100% super focused.
Yeah.
And art does that too. And things like music and visiting museums and just like really like diving deep into art is so important for our field, not just regurgitating the content that we see out there. Because I think also on Instagram and social media, it's so easy to just want to duplicate what you keep seeing over and over. As a patient, like you want the lips you keep seeing. As an injector, you want to give people what you see other people getting. But I like to break that and, you know, take two steps back and think really, what creative things can I do for this space? What different ideas can we employ, like combination therapies or blending or doing things? Like, we have a palette of tools. The fillers, the toxins, the, you know, myomodulation, melting fat, building muscle, now building skin tone. We have all these beautiful tools, and now we can sculpt human beauty at so many levels. So it's going to be fabulous to have creative people like you and me doing fun things with faces. Just once you learn all the rules, you can break them, right? Hopefully.
Exactly. And what you said about being a doctor, being doing medicine, it's so important, because sometimes people really forget about that, really forget about the relationship and they understand the empathy that you have to have with the patients. And this is so important, that the final result, the excellent result that you can deliver, it will be no good if this not resonates with the patient. So I think that we need to practice medicine always, and don't forget on how important these aspects reside in the treatment as well.
Yes, so true. Some significant changes in aesthetics are happening to where now we're going to get longer lasting toxins. In the U.S., we have DAXI, which is the 6-month duration toxin. And what do you think about this? Do you think we should dive right in to give people facial weakness for paralyzed facial muscles for 6 months? I know you have the personal story of having a facial paralysis from, was it a Bell's palsy? So it's interesting to me because when I think about facial paralysis and what we're doing with toxins, we're knocking out muscle function for 6 months. I wonder, is this a good idea or is this going to cause too much muscle atrophy? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that we need to see how this is going to evolve. We have Botox for like 30 years from the start of the use of the toxin. And I really don't know how it's going to be. I think that 5-6 months, you can reestablish after that the muscle tone. But what I see is that when you use the toxin, we start to like a feedback on our muscles, how we mimic them, how we contract the muscles of the face, and we start to reinitiate the way we communicate. I don't know if I was clear, but I think that the facial expressions are so important for the communication. And if you have the paralyzed face like it used to be maybe 10 years ago with lots of Botox and everything was freezing and you have no expressions, I don't think that this is good for relationship. We need to understand how people are expressing themselves. And I don't know, we didn't work with DAXI yet, and I don't know how is the results. But I think that every patient is looking for a more natural results, even with the toxin. So I don't know how you feel. How was the use of DAXI in your clinic, and what's your thoughts about that?
You know what? I haven't used it yet in my clinic. I've been a little hesitant, and I kind of want to see how the first batch of patients and users do out there, because, you know, for the simple reason that even an expert hand, sometimes you can inadvertently weaken a muscle that you don't intend to. You can drop a brow, you can affect a lip. So I want to be super certain of it's really going to give a benefit before I commit to doing a 6-month course. I like the idea of seeing my patients a little more frequently. I worry that if they have a side effect, it'll be a 6-month duration side effect. And I'm not up for that. That's too long. Like anyone can handle 2 or 3 months of a little bit of a, you know, slip up, but which can of course happen even in the most expert hands. So that's something I worry about. I really am concerned about muscle atrophy and changing facial structure, because I do think that bone density changes when it doesn't have the pull of the muscle groups on it. And we start to see this thin, shiny skinned forehead appearance, and it doesn't look, it looks smooth, but does it look young? Not really. Mm-hmm. Does it look pretty? Not really. So I'm a little concerned. So that's something I'm waiting to decide, and I don't know that we need it.
Yeah, I think that we can see those bone reflections of the use of toxin in mandible with the using masseter, that you can see more bone atrophy, osteoporosis in the mandible because of the use of toxin in masseter. But I think it might be interesting for patients who need a more durable treatment for leg limbs, treatment for facial palsy, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be interesting to do a less longer treatment, but I really don't know how it's going to how it's going to be used in the facial aesthetic treatment.
Yeah, for beauty, like maybe for migraines, for TMJ, yeah. for torticollis, for patients that have medical necessity, yeah. that would be super amazing to only get one or two treatments a year. So, but it's interesting because sometimes companies give us this marketing that like, here it is, it's 6 months of paralysis and weakness. And then everybody's like, oh, let's do it, let's do it. But I want to be the person who says like, should we be doing this? I think we need to think about it, because it's one thing to buy it, sell it, then we're going to push it out to our patients. I really want to make sure it's going to create more beauty, not more problems for people. And also just think about the face, like you said, like shouldn't all the little intricacies of facial movement and musculature, shouldn't we want to preserve some of that? And maybe there is a biofeedback loop that when you turn it off, the nerve endings regrow in a little different way, or there's some synkinesis or dyskinesis that occurs. So I'm just curious to see. There's so many exciting things out there, but anything else that's coming up in the next 10 years that you think is going to really revolutionize what we do? Are we going to switch to no more invasive, aggressive surgeries and everything minimalistic, minimally invasive?
I think that we will probably see lots of changes in the in the injectable field. I don't know how soon it will appear, but probably the individual treatment that was planned for him, like we have already the how do you call that in English? The PRP.
PRP that we use, plasma. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we use the blood cells from the patients, and probably we are going to be able to engineer that and create more fillers with the cells of the patient, with enriched with growth factors. Probably we are going to see that in a few years from now. And I think that it might be very revolutionary. We are growing meat without the need of the animals in that. So I think that we are going to face very, very different aspects in aesthetic medicine. But I don't know. I really don't know how soon it will become.
Yeah, I think the future will be fascinating, but definitely harnessing the regenerative power of the body using stem cells and growth factors, maybe a combination, like a combination of PLLA plus PRP, that would be like really liquid gold. So all those things are hopefully coming soon. It's going to be so exciting. Aesthetics really truly is in its infancy, so everything is evolving so quickly. So it's wonderful to have scientists and artists like yourself kind of at the forefront. And I'm so glad to have met you at the Brazil MAP meeting. And I don't know why you invited me, but thank you for inviting me. I was having such a great time, and it was so many wonderful connections. And tell us a little bit about where people can reach out to find you if they're coming to visit Brazil or they want to connect with you. What are your handles?
Okay, that's okay. Thank you very much. It was really very nice to have you here in Brazil. I first saw you in Monaco in your speech in the Congress in Monaco. And we were very enthusiastic about the Sculptra talk that you had. So it was very nice for all of us to have you here. And I'm here in Brazil. I'm in São Paulo. Everybody can look for me in my Instagram account, which is at Fabio Saito Cirurgia Plástica. So it's in Portuguese, at Fabio Saito Cirurgia Plástica. And it will be a pleasure to have you in my social media, and anyone who wants to contact me. Thank you for the opportunity for this chat. It was been very nice to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I encourage you guys to reach out. This man was single-handedly the vision for this. You worked with such a huge team, but they put together this amazing meeting. But I really thought that you curated it very well, and it was excellent. So thank you for having me, and thanks for coming on the podcast. I'm so excited to learn how to do some glass blowing one day.
Yeah, sure.
and we'll come and visit Brazil soon. You're definitely welcome to Los Angeles. Anytime you're coming, you better let me know.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Kay.
It's a pleasure. You guys will link his info in the bio. And don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. That's where you can find me doing amazing things with Sculptra and one of my favorite products. And our website is the same. It's beautybydrk.com. And that's where we have our amazing skincare line. We have a podcast every Tuesday and every Friday. Check us out. And tune in for the next one. That's it for now. Bye from Brazil. Stay beautiful.